Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Should start their ministry with lynching. No one should end their ministry with lynching. The lynching was national news. The RNN, the Roman News Network, was reporting it. And NPR, National Public Radio, had it on the radio. The Jerusalem Post and the Palestine Times all wanted exclusive. They searched out the young minister, showed up unannounced at their houses, tried to talk with their families, called up their friends, wanted to get a quote on how do you feel about the lynching.
Good sense, ill sense, crippling mankind, dead kings, many things I can define.
Rock and Roll Friday, Savage Nation. Here we go again. America-hating Trinidad Baptist Church's new pastor, Otis Morse, trying to outdo the shock frock. We're calling him Shock Frock 2. Come on, play the rock and roll. They don't care about politics. All right, turn it off, Freddy. I'm going home. If I don't get a call within 1 minute at 1-800-449-8255 on any topic for Rock and Roll Friday, I'm just quitting for the day. It's Powhana time on the Savage Nation. After 150 surgeries, heroic Iraq vet dies. Terrible, nightmarish. I don't even direct you to the website to see this poor guy. I don't know how he took it. I don't know how anyone could take this. And I don't know that these pictures should be shown, to be honest with you. I don't know what good they do, but we are talking about Trinity Baptist Church's new pastor, Otis Morse. He is a chip off the old block. As you well know, Shock Frock 1 has now gone on to bigger pastures than the little old Trinity Baptist Church in Chicago, where Obama sat so dutifully for 20 years in the pews, listening to the fetid garbage coming out of Shock Frock 1's mouth. So you would think that they would have learned by Shock Frock 1's embarrassment and what it did to Obama. But no, Trinity Baptist Church has a new pastor. He compares, him and Shock Frock 1 and 2 are running neck and neck. He called it a lynching. Do you really think it was a lynching? What was a lynching to play the man's actual beliefs? Is that a lynching? A lynching is when you take something out of context and put it within another context, as is done to me on a regular basis. That is an electronic lynching. An electronic lynching is when Clarence Thomas tries to get appointed as a Supreme Court justice and they spread rumors about him that are totally unfounded. That is a lynching. No, it's not a lynching when you play the crackpot anti-American, anti-white statements of a pastor that are based upon a 20-year track record. That's not a lynching, my friend. That is a footprint. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. It's Rock and Roll Friday. We're going to start again with Incense and Peppermint right here on the Savage Nation. The Summer of Love on the Savage Nation. Let's hear that tune once again. That was a great year, 67, now that I think back on it. I love those bell bottoms, the patchouli oil, the no shaving. I love when they burn the brassieres. People were loose. Take a look at what they became today. All you got to do is look at the politicians from the year of the woman. You'll know what happened to the summer of love. Why am I laughing? Because I'm laughing. All right, you can turn it on. If you want to know where the people from the Summer of Love went, just look inside the Democrat National Committee. You'll know where the people from the Summer of Love went. And take a look at what it did for them. You know, I'm starting to think that my mother was right. God bless her soul. Died at 88. Dad passed away in 1970. She never remarried, never went out with another man. Never. 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 Women from our generation did go out with other men and get remarried. She didn't. She lived happily to 88. And I asked her on this show once what the secret to her longevity was. And she had such a sense of timing. She caught me off guard. I thought I could catch her. I just asked her, Cole, I said, to what do you owe your longevity? I figured she didn't know the word because she was an educated woman, was not. So she says, she pauses and says, you mean in my case? I say, yes. She says, no sex. Now, that was an amazing statement. I am starting to think that the people who have more sex rather than less or no sex live longer. And as witness, I bring forth the evidence in the form of nuns. Nuns look like alabaster and pure and perfect late in life. Why? Because they're not, I don't know, they're not in that realm of rolling in the pig pen. While those who rolled in the pig pen of the 60s, take a look at them today. I mean, as I said, I'm not jesting. Take a look at the Year of the Woman, which was 1994 when they came into Congress and they told us. Do you remember how they said that when women entered Congress, it would be a more compassionate America? Congress would be cleaner and less corrupt. They look like guys who were made into geldings. I can't believe these women. They're always meaner than the guys. They're always trying to prove something. But that's all. That's the whole story. If you want to talk about that, please don't call me. Call Dr. Love. Don't call me because I got nothing more to say on that subject because we can't go anywhere with that. I have in my hand, by the way, the Hemingway book that we were talking about yesterday with A. Hotchner, The Good Life. You know, it's pretty interesting, the pictures in the book. I didn't get to look at the pictures. At 60, I look better than him. I'm shocked to find out. You see, when I read him when I was young, I looked up at him because – up to him. What is it? Look up. Well, I looked up to him because he was a younger man and he was so heroic looking. But little do you know that when you reach the age at which he shot himself and you look better than him, you start to ask yourself some questions. Why did he look so bad at 60? Now, A. Hutchner said it was because he lived life to the full, and that's why he looked 80 at 60. Well, all right. I mean, I don't know. I'm just doing a sort of post-mortem here. The guy was a great writer and still one of my heroes, but he didn't look too good at 60. I think it was the booze and the cigarettes. And if you ask me to pick the two, of the two, which was the worst, it would have to be the cigarettes. Wore him out. But he was a pretty heavy, he was a pretty heavy drinker. I had a great caller yesterday on the show. If you missed the interview, we're talking about a new book about Hemingway written by a man who lived with him for 14 years. Many of you don't know who I'm talking about. You think I'm talking about something else, but I'm not. Because Hemingway isn't taught anymore because he was A, too good a writer, B, he was white, and C, he was a male. And so therefore, if he was a good writer and white and a male, he no longer belongs in the canon of English literature. The only people who belong in the canon of literature are A, non-whites, B, gay or lesbian, and C, bad writers. If you don't meet any of those criteria, you're no longer taught in the universities. But I'm lucky enough to have been brought up before the Cuban Revolution and the Maoist Revolution that sank our universities to fifth-rate status. And so I truly still know what good art is and good writing is. And in fact, I still know what good science is, which is another lost art. And it's a strange thing to say that science is now a lost art, but that's exactly what I meant. Science is now a lost art as well, because too much of science or what passes for science is promoted by corporations, and I have nothing against corporations. I'm involved in corporate life. I know what it's like. There are good corporations, medium and bad, and not all corporations are evil. But when you buy doctors as cheaply as you can buy – if you can buy a doctor as cheaply as Elliot Spitzer bought Love, what you wind up with is not science published in the literature, but what you have today in most cases. You get it? Yes, no, maybe. So give me another rock and roll here because I'm starting to roll. I'm starting to roll today. And I'm no longer on a rock. Yeah, you read my soul. Yeah, right. Look, you're going to San Francisco. Look what you wind up with here. You ever see these sickos in the government here? Bell bottoms on their soles. They got velvet where their heart should be. There are supervisors in this city. Why even waste your time? What do you care about Lilliputians? I was snookered by this garbage. The Pied Pipers, who told me it was filled with gentle people. Junkies, sexual degenerates, rip-off artists, con men. I met some good people, to be honest. None of them are in politics. It's interesting. I met good people. None of them are in politics. The worst people I met, the worst that I met, wound up in politics. In my whole life, you know that I'm thinking about it? Hold it. The people I met who were truly evil, that I, let's say, knew very briefly, wherever I've lived. And I lived in many places, and I lived in Hawaii. The person I met there who was the worst person I ever met as a congressman, an evil anti-Semitic person, a diehard left-wing congressman to these days who hides his evilness and his anti-Semitism. Then in San Francisco, the people I met who were truly evil, the type would always try to rip you off either for your old lady or for your dope, as they used to say, all became minor politicians and then went on to something even worse than that. They went into the field of psychiatry or psychology so they could really manipulate people and get into their souls. But, you know, I'm rambling. Again, I'm a rambling man, and that's because the Reverend talked about grambling bands yesterday, and it triggered the desire for me to be a rambling man instead of a grambling band. And I have nothing against grambling bands. I kind of like grambling bands as much as I like drill precision bands. But I must tell you, there are times that I listen to some of my callers, and I know that there are days that I get callers that only a doctor can understand. I'll be right back.
Savage.
John is in the basement mixing up the medicine. I'm on the pavement thinking about the government. The man in a trench coat, batch out, laid off. Says he's got a bad cough, wants to get it paid off. Look out, kid, it's something you did. God knows when, but you're doing it again. You better duck down the alleyway looking for a new friend. The man in a coonskin cap in a pig pen wants $11 bills. You only got 10.
He was great. He was really a great poet and songwriter. But he shot his wad, you know, by a certain point. Thank you very much. That's the beauty of surviving, is that you wind up doing what you wanted to do when they were doing it and couldn't, and they're all gone. I mean, it's an amazing thing. No, there's a certain beauty in it. There's a certain beauty in coming on strong late in life. You never know how that race is gonna end up. You got to live your whole life before you give up on yourself. And I want to tell you that. Let's say you're 30 years old, 35 years old, 38 years old, and you haven't hit it in any way yet. Don't give up. You might really strike your stride at 60. Don't think it can't happen. It can happen. And I'm gonna give you a very prosaic example. You're going to laugh. Colonel Sanders, Kentucky Fried Chicken. All his life he tried. None of his businesses worked. His big hit was at 60-something, 63. You say, well, okay, that's no, it can happen. The trick is to keep having hope no matter what your endeavor is. And hope, you know, springs eternal. How many different ways has it been written by how many different writers? You know, from the ashes out of the Phoenix Rises has been written. You can't give up on yourself. That's if you still have the desire to, let us say, write that great story, paint that great painting. I don't know, climb that great mountain, have the great business, have the perfect marriage finally. Number three might work for you. I've heard it from guys. They got it right finally at number three. They were 79. They had no sex. And that's why the marriage was perfect. Neither party wanted anything. But, you get me started now on that subject. I don't even want to go in there because there's no answer to that. I have no advice in one area, sex and love. It's an area I have avoided giving anyone advice on my entire life. Even the children. No comment. Really? You're the father. Yeah, well, all right. No answer. I did that even when the kids were growing up. I didn't discuss the topic. I figured they'll learn it the way, you know, everyone does. What do you have to give them a textbook for? It makes them more uncomfortable and you were more uncomfortable. What do you have to teach them sex? What, that's a Swedish concept from the 1950s that the parent has to sit down and teach the child every little detail? No, you don't. No, let them learn it in the gutter better. You don't even have to go. They don't have to go to the gutter. Let them go to the internet. They'll learn. Or do you think they know more than you do by the time they're 12? Take a look at the girls walking around the malls in Marin County with their mother. You don't know which one is a bigger Jezebel. I can't stand mothers who try to be 14-year-old girls with their kids. That is so wrong. I mean, you know, oh, I'm my daughter's best friend. She don't want you to be her best friend. She wants you to be her mother, and she wants you to set boundaries for her. She doesn't want you looking like a skank walking around the mall with her with lipstick on your nose. Nancy, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. I just wanted to say that I'm grateful that you're on the air,
And it's an education listening to you all the time.
Even when I'm joking?
Yes, because I think you're very funny.
Well, you know what? That's a very important part of talk radio. The day you cease to be entertaining, you become NPR. And as we all know, NPR is like a dead balloon. Boring. Thanks very much. Ernie, Houston, Texas, KPRC country. Welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi. Listen, I've got this feeling that's been growing in my soul over the past year. And I woke up this morning and I realized what it is when I look at someone that I perceive to be black, there's a question in my mind now. And it wasn't before. And the question is this one of those people who hates me, like this man, Jeremiah Wright, in this huge movement that I didn't even know a thing about? And so I'm wondering, are race relations worse, or was I just too stupid a year ago to realize how much I was hated because of the way I was perceived to be?
It's a good question. I think Jeremiah Wright wants the hatred of the 60s to return. I think that kind of man would love to see Burn, Baby, Burn, because remember, guys like that came to power during the turmoil of the 60s. That's when they hit their real stride. And the question is, why do we need the racial divide opened up again? It's like a wound that has much healed. This man has now taken a meat axe to the sutures, or I should say a meat axe, not to the sutures, but to the wound itself, and cut it wide open. Now, you may say, well, good, it'll let the pus out. I don't think it'll let the pus out. I think it's going to cause racial hatred and racial division. And I think, by the way, that the only way Obama can survive is not by distancing himself from Shock Frock 1, but by disengaging from Trinity Baptist Church itself. Trinity Baptist Church is a radical left-wing church, and as I've said to you, it is not representative of black churches, no matter what the newspapers like the New York Times try to tell you, that they're all behind them. They're not all behind them. Most black churches do not think this way, do not preach this way. They despise this kind of a behavior. And what I'm saying is, don't assume that all black people espouse the hatred of this man and of the Black Panther Party and of the Nation of Islam. He represents a small fringe of the black community. That's my opinion.
Savage.
Take it!
Rock and Roll Friday. Lighten up. Joy light for you. I can't hear a word.
Well, you know you got it if it makes you feel good. Oh, yes.
You know you got it if it makes you feel good. It really got her very far. Junkie wound up dying in her own vomit.
You're out on the streets looking good. And baby, deep down in your heart, I guess you know that you're
not. Remember how big you thought she was? Aren't you glad you didn't become like her? All you women who just, like, held yourself back? This is an argument for restraint. I play these people, or Jerry Garcia. An argument to be straight and uptight. Oh, God. Turn it off. She euthanized herself. That's what she did. I mean, she knew better than anybody that she needed a good, lethal injection of marijuana, heroin, and alcohol. That's what she did to herself. The 60s. What a myth and a fraud. Look what it produced. What it did. You know what gave this country was a mini Marxist revolution, and we still haven't recovered from it. We still are running on the fumes. In other words, the Obama campaign is reflective of the degeneracy and madness of the 60s, in case you don't know it. Make no mistake about it. If it were not for the scum in the media, this guy would be nowhere. This guy, there's not a picture they don't run of him. They calculate each picture to make him look like a combination of JFK. Every shot of him is a combo of JFK, Martin Luther King Jr., and Jesus Christ in oil paint. There's not one picture that actually shows the guy looking like he is, an ordinary-looking goofball with big ears. I mean, that's what he looks like. If you actually see him in a normal picture, he's not a good-looking man. But every shot in the New York Times is heroic. Reminds me of the statues in Stalinist Russia that I've seen pictures of in the art. You know, every picture was of the heroic worker in the steel plant, for example. You remember that kind of art? What I'm talking about, that propaganda art? Every picture of Obama is shot from a certain angle to make him look heroic and perfect. And when you start to see the inside of the man, like we all have inside in dark places, suddenly they cover up for him because they're desperate to see the 60s revolution take hold and take root in the White House and destroy the country once and for all. Now, what do I mean by that? Why am I so terrified and why do I object so strongly to the revolution that they're trying to impose upon us? They've already achieved this revolution in the American universities. With very few exceptions and only a few areas of study, is there any scholarship left? Most of the rest of it is rubbish and total rubbish, where the inferior have taken over the departments and trashed what was, to begin with, a limited scholarship in their field. That's how they were able to get into the university to begin with. Then they became deans. They can't destroy certain fields such as engineering and chemistry. It's almost impossible to put a dummy into any of those fields and force the dummy ahead, because the dummy still has to take a test. If the dummy can't design a bridge that holds up, even a model bridge, the dummy doesn't pass. So that's not a field for a lefty. A lefty has to go into social science and things of that nature. They cannot go into the hard sciences. They cannot go into the other fields and completely dominate them, because there's no way to fake it. An element is an element is an element. And either you make the element, the elements come together properly in a chemistry experiment, or they don't. You can't fake it. That's unless you're totally crazy. Then you become a Soviet-style scientist, and you invent the results, as they did. You create things that don't exist. And anyone who disagrees with you, you destroy or kill, as Stalin did. There's a great book that came out on the murder of Nikolai Vavilov, the story of Stalin's persecution of one of the great scientists of the 20th century, by Peter Pringle. I received the book this week. It's too esoteric for me to go into on the show. But here is a man who was a great scientist. And he had great ideas. He had an idea, this scientist, a dream of ending hunger and famine in the world, this Dr. Vavilov. And he would use the emerging science of genetics to breed super plants that could grow anywhere, in any climate, in sandy deserts and freezing tundra, in drought and flood. The doctor said he would launch botanical expeditions to find these vanishing genes that were overlooked by early farmers, ignorant of Mendel's laws of heredity. He called it a mission for all humanity. Remember what I'm talking about, the early days of the communist revolution in Russia. Now, to the leaders of the young Soviet state, this Dr. Vavilov had a dream, and it fit perfectly into their larger scheme for a socialist utopia. Lenin supported the adventurous young Dr. Vavilov. He was handsome and seductive. He became like an Indiana Jones hunting lost botanical treasures on five continents. In a former czarist palace in what is now St. Petersburg, he built the world's first seed bank, 250,000 specimens. It was a living museum of plant diversity that was the envy of scientists everywhere and remains so even today. But listen what happened now. When Lenin died in 1924 and Stalin took over, Vavilov's dream turned into a nightmare. You see, this doctor was from a bourgeois background. That was the class of society most despised and distrusted by the communists, the Bolsheviks. He came from the middle class, in other words. The new comrade scientists started to taunt and insult him, just as is going on in the American university today. And Stalin's dreaded secret police, those would be the diversity trainers, built up false charges of sabotage and espionage. They would, in other words, accuse a man like him today of sexism or of racism. And then Stalin created the collectivization of farmland. And do you know what that Stalinism did to the farmland of Russia? He collectivized farmland, meaning he socialized it. It was taken out of the hands of individual farmers. It caused chaos in the Soviet food production system. Millions of people, 30 million people, died in widespread famine as a result of Stalin's insanity. And Dr. Vavilov, what happened to him? Well, his master plan for improving Soviet crops was designed to work over several decades, not over a few years. And so he couldn't meet Stalin's impossible demands for immediate results. So what happened to him? Well, in Stalin's terror of the 1930s, Russian geneticists were repressed in favor of the peasant horticulturalist Lysenko. You may have read of him in college, Lysenko. Lysenko came up with fraudulent claims and theories that were completely false. And who was the victim of this faker? Vavilov, and he was sentenced to death. But unlike Galileo, Vavilov refused to recant his beliefs. And in the most cruel twist, this humanitarian pioneer scientist was starved to death in the gulag, while the faker Lysenko was glorified and given many medals, even though people were starving to death in Russia. Now, I tell you this long story to give you a warning. I warn you that we are on the road to the Lysenkoization of American science. You see, we're not so far away from that happening in this country because of, you call it political correctness, I call it something else, but use what you will, where the fraudulent hucksters are promoted in every sphere of academia, every sphere of learning. The fraudulent hucksters have now taken over. You don't have to look any further than the newspapers. You think they're going out of business because of what they tell you? They lie to you every day, and then they're going out of business, and they say the reason they're going out of business is because advertising is going to the internet. No, it's not because of that. Sure, a lot of advertising has gone to the internet, but I'm not on the internet. I'm on radio. How come this show is bigger than ever? We're not suffering here. We're doing great all of a sudden. We've done great. We've overcome all of the lies heaped upon us by that front group for terrorists, and we're doing just fine. No, it's because the truth sells, my friend, not lies. Deceit does not sell in America's living rooms. Perversion is not wanted. It's not welcome on the breakfast table on Sunday, which is why the New York Times Sunday paper has fallen 10%. If every week you put out a broadsheet and a picture of people that nobody really wants to promote for their children to see, like last Sunday was the bottom for me. The New York Times magazine section showed two men living together, married, the new marriage, they called it. I didn't want to see that on Sunday morning on my I wasn't in the mood to have that, you know, with my morning cereal. Now, what I'm saying to you is a long story, but it's actually a short story and it's an old story. And that old story is right today. When I'm telling you that Janis Joplin was lauded and glorified, so many musicians were lauded and glorified, even though they were despicable human beings, they were the worst, most horrible role models imaginable. Sure, their music was charming. You know, the devil has many, many, many ways. But their own lives were indicators of a disaster inside their brain. But how many millions of us were led astray by them? How many millions of us were temporarily led astray by Timothy Leary or by Allen Ginsberg or some of the other devils of that period? And so now, why am I talking about it today in the year 2008 when it's so long ago? Because Obama is a representative. He is a postcard from the 60s. Michael Savage just said that Obama is a message in a bottle. He's a message in the bottle from the 1960s. And so if you want more drugs, sex, and rock and roll in America, if you want more Lysenkos and fewer Vavilovs in the universities, if you want more of the inauthentic leading America even further astray and more of the authentic pushed aside, then you're going to vote for a guy like Obama, because this man is a message in a bottle. This guy was thrown into the sea in 1960-something or other, and now he's floated back up, and the liberal radicals have pulled him out of the bottle and held him up as though he's the Messiah. But we all know he's a tofu Messiah, as are all Messiahs. You know, to the Christian, there's been only one Messiah. To the Muslim, there is only one Messiah. To the Jewish person, there is only one Messiah. And, of course, to the 60s, we are all messiahs. And only if we follow the protocols of libertinism and collectivism, then, of course, we are perfectly acceptable. But if we do not follow the adages and the ideas, let's say, of collectivism and of libertinism, we are not acceptable to the American media nor to the American intelligentsia today. And that, of course, is to the detriment of the country, which is why we're in the shape we are in to a large extent. Now, don't think I don't understand the other side of the balance sheet. The other side of the balance sheet would be the Republicans who have hoodwinked the American people for so long. Not all of them, a good percentage, about 80% of them have hoodwinked you. There's a hardcore 20% in the Southeast that are really rock-ribbed, good, patriotic, fiscally conservative Americans. They're great, great people. And you can see it by their speeches and by their votes. But by and large, 80% of the Republicans are complete charlatans. They have misled many of you with the idea of so-called free market capitalism, when in fact, we're not living with free market capitalism. We're living with monopoly capitalism, which is anathema to a free system. You see, many people in the radio business who mislead you are ignorant of that themselves because they never went to college. They have the rudiments from reading books reading. I don't know what they read, but they never really studied anything. They've read things, but they've not studied anything. There's a huge difference between reading and studying. Let me put it to you that way. You have to have been a scholar to know what scholarship means. It means hard labor. It means sitting there breaking the rocks with a hammer for weeks, months, years to figure something out. It doesn't mean glibly reading an internet article and thinking you're an expert. So many people who have misled many of you, good people, have told you that we're in a free market and we should permit the free market to work. And that's why you went along with Bush's idea of the World Trade Organization or NAFTA and things of that nature. Or that the oil companies are really not bathing in profits, that it's the free market determining their profits. Nothing could be further from the truth. It's a big lie. It is a big lie, and it is as dangerous, if not more dangerous, than the collectivism and the libertinism of the left. So you got to understand that somewhere down the middle, the Tao, the middle way, is the way, and I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. I'm in my own world right now. You'll have to forgive me. But let me tell you something. Those who do not know their history are condemned to repeat it. And many of us don't know our history because the Lysenkos of the world are on television lying to you. The inauthentic journalists are on television broadcasting to you.
Well, it's Obama. It's ahead. No, it's Hillary ahead. Why, in Indiana, they say that Reverend Wright has had no effect. No, it has had an effect. Oh, no, Hillary's ahead. Oh, no, Obama's ahead. Oh, no, Hillary's ahead. Why, the latest poll from Harass Putin says that this one's ahead and that one's ahead.
These are all frauds. Polls are frauds. The TV journalists are not journalists. There are some real journalists out there. I've had them on the show. They're really great. But they're like Vavilov, the ones I have on my show, and the others are like Lysenko. Now, why am I bothering you with such an obscure historical reference? Because I fear for the future of my country. When so many inauthentic Lysenkos are in so many high places, it's bad enough. But if you think they're happy with their power, you're mistaken. What they want to do is destroy the authentic in order to validate their lies. That's what the Soviets did. And so when the fake man, the Lysenko, the guy, the faker, came and got the power and was appointed to the head of the top post in the Agricultural Science Division, he became the head of the Leningrad Institute. What did he do? He created files on the authentic Vavilov from spies. And the NKVD, the Secret Service of the time, opened the new file number 300669. And listen to how the headings were. You won't believe this. It said, quote, struggle waged by reactionary scientists against academician Lysenko. Now, look at the word reactionary. I have been called a reactionary by the communists in the media. Do you know that? Do you have any idea that we're living through a sort of communist struggle in the United States of America? Many of you do know this, but the time is so late right now, and things have gotten so bad now, that I feel I'm going to devote an awful lot of every show to trying to, again, raise the alarm before it's too late. Obama is a stealth communist candidate. I don't give a darn if the garlic breath Larry King or the charlatan Lysenko on Fox News disagrees with me for ratings. They would have Hitler on if they could get Hitler on. They would make sure that when Hitler came on, they wouldn't show the concentration camps if that would boost ratings. I understand how the Lysenkos operate. I've always understood it. But that's irrelevant to me. What's relevant is that you, the American people, not get fooled into thinking that Obama is some kind of new man and a new change. His preacher gave away who he was. His preacher told us that he's a radical communist and he's a revolutionary of the bad kind, not of the good kind. I'm an evolutionary. I'm not a revolutionary. And let me tell you something. We don't need a revolution of the type that Obama and his minions would bring to this country. We've seen it before. It occurred in the Soviet Union. It occurred in Cambodia. It occurred in Poland. It occurred in Hungary. It occurred in every Eastern Bloc, a country that has thrown it away. They went through the terrors and the horrors of collectivization and of this kind of spying on people who are better than them, the authentic as opposed to the inauthentic. So I'll pause right here because some of you certainly understood what I just said, and the problem is you already knew this. You know, I once wrote when I was 17 years old the following in my journal, those who know will always know, those who know will always know, and those who won't forever or what can never. Yeah, those who know will always know, and those who won't can never. That's it. In other words, there are people whose minds are open and understand it. Then there are people whose minds are warped and brainwashed and closed. They can't understand not only what I'm saying. They don't want to understand the reality of where they're being dragged. Some of them don't even know where they're going. The so-called progressives don't even know that they're not progressives. They're regressives. They're Bolsheviks. They want to drag us into this nightmare that I just read to you, where authentic scientists, authentic journalists are not only thrown out of their positions, but debased and lied about with secret files and stories. You know that there are 1,000 clips of me on YouTube? I didn't know that. I looked on it today because I wanted to see this thing on the New Trinity Baptist Church, Pastor Otis Morse. I went on. I put my name in. There's over 1,000 YouTube entries. But there are some vile scum out there who continuously take and distort things I've said and try to make the worst come up first. YouTube is very much like the vile Wikipedia. The evil Wikipedia, in my opinion, that are run by radical leftists who hate the true and the authentic and embrace the false and the evil. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back to take your calls right here.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
To Barack Obama in One Generation. Welcome to the Savage Nation. I'm trying here to send you a message. You think, many of you, that Barack Obama represents change. He doesn't. He represents a throwback to Bolshevik times in the ex-Soviet Union, in my opinion. You may not know that because many of you think that it can't happen here, while a good portion of that has already happened here. I can delineate how much of the Sovietization of this society has already occurred. Many of you don't even know that we're halfway to the slave labor camp. You think that I'm making this up and you think I'm just hyping you. Well, so be it. I can only do what I can do in my own way. What I'm basically talking about is that Barack Obama is not a man who represents going forward, but going backwards. And the Maoist or communist revolution that was started in this country in the 1960s, as evidenced by Janis Joplin's music and the other junkies and degenerates, many of whom euthanized themselves because they knew they were vile off air. They understood how bad they really were. And so they euthanized themselves with either alcohol or heroin or God knows what else they used. And many of them, thank God, went across the River Styx a long time ago. Unfortunately, many people who were bred on that music or grew up on that music have become very important in politics, in the news media, and academia. And I gave an example in the last hour of what happened in the ex-Soviet Union back in the early days of the Bolshevik Revolution, where they took a great scientist by the name of Vavilov and dismissed him, put him in a prison cell, and replaced him with a faker named Lysenko, who lied about his discoveries. And then eventually Vavilov, the true and authentic scientist, was starved to death in a prison cell. And what I'm saying to you is this is occurring in America today on a minor scale. Not that the dissidents who know the truth are being starved to death or put in a re-education camp, but they've been ejected. They've been ejected from the media. They've been ejected from the university. They have been rejected by the mainstream media. They've been rejected by the mainstream academics. And consequently, what we have is a low-grade Soviet-style revolution going on in America today. And if, God forbid, this huckster Obama should get away with his fakery, where he's been real cool and sophisticated in pushing communism in his messages on a very light note, but with a little help from the Bolsheviks and the media, he's gotten very far. Remember the other song of the 60s, I get by with a little help from my friends? I get high with a little help from my friends. This is their man. They've been waiting for this moment. They feel they found the ultimate candidate, a biracial man who could cross the racial divide and slip right through and slip a noose around America's the Statue of Liberty and hang her. Well, let me tell you something. Reverend Wright was no accident. Reverend Wright was providence. It was God's hand that pushed this egomaniac onto the world stage. And what we saw with Reverend Wright was the inside of Barack Obama. Make no mistake about it. You're looking and hearing the inside of Barack Obama through this man, Reverend Wright. And so we have to thank Reverend Wright for that. And I'm trying to warn you what he is. Hillary is by no means a Bolshevik. She has now become, because they're a wealthy family and she's grown up, Hillary is a mainstream liberal. Do you understand the difference between the two? I wouldn't vote for her, but she's a mainstream liberal. Barack Obama is not a mainstream liberal. Barack Obama is a retrograde Bolshevik. And now I'm going to take some calls on the Savage Nation. Dimitri, KNEW, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I was born and raised in Russia, and every time I listen to your show, it reminds me like 30 years ago, I would lock myself in the bathroom, let the water run, and listen to Voice of America so my neighbors wouldn't hear me. So every time I listen to your show, it reminds me of those times. You are such a wonderful person, and it's a shame that a lot of people don't realize that you're coming to work every single day, taking those battles, and you're not doing this for yourself. You're doing it for the country. You're doing it for American people, and they just don't realize how wonderful you are. I want to thank
you. I want to go back to the story you just told. You're saying when you were living in the Soviet Union, when you listened to the Voice of America, naturally it was illegal, and you could be arrested for listening to it. You ran the water in the bath so your neighbors wouldn't hear you listening to the Voice of America. That's what you said, correct?
So they would not report me to authorities that I'm doing such an illegal thing. And
Dimitri, do you know that there are people who listen to this show and have neighbors call the police? Do you know if they listen to this show at work, their supervisors come over like little Soviet martinets and tell them to turn the show off? Do you realize this show is the most censored radio talk show in America?
Let them do it. Let them do it. Let them know that there are people like yourself and people like myself that, you know, that immigrated to this country 30 years ago to the United States of America, but not to the United States of illegal immigrants. That's all I can say.
God bless you. Thanks for the call. You know, I listened yesterday. I did a piece on immigration. It came out of me, and I'm going to play it for you when we come back because it's so good. But it wound up on YouTube, and I listened to it. I didn't know it was so good. Now I'm going to play it for you today for a reason. Someone who listened to that outtake on my take on what illegal immigration is doing to this country said to me, what you said is amazing, and it's funny, she said to me, that pornography is more widely disseminated and pornography is more widely accepted than is the stark, utter reality of what you say on your show every day. I said, I know that. I know that. That these frauds, these Lysenkos in the media, these inauthentic journalists who pose as journalists, would rather have a girl, you know, exhibiting herself by switching her legs around too many times, or even a pornographer himself, than a truth sayer on their show, because they don't work in that medium. And you may say, well, I have bitterness. So be it. What do I care? I'm a human being. Some of my favorite foods have bitterness in them. I like garlic. I like many foods that have bitterness in them. It doesn't mean the entire food is bitter. It means there is bitterness in them. I don't like sweet foods, and I don't sound too sweet. I don't eat sweets. Give me a headache. Headaches will kill you faster than fats. Sweets will kill you faster than fats. Fats. In fact, sugar is the number one cause of disease in the United States of America and in the Western world, according to everything I know. The single biggest causation of all degenerative diseases is not fat, but sugar. One day I'll give you a whole discourse on it. I didn't want to talk about nutrition today. But I did want to talk about the difference between what you think is real and what is real. And so I've done it. And so now it's Friday, and many of you just want to hear rock and roll music and be left alone with this long lecture. But I drifted into it without meaning so. It's because I woke up today, and I realized how far gone we are in this country with regard to what we had as freedom. How many of you think that we're not living in a sort of mini-Soviet state? You know that if you go to work, and you work in any corporation, and you say what you actually think about any topic, whether it be Obama or Reverend Wright, or about any other topic, welfare, affirmative action, reparations, you name it, you'll be told that you're going to be dismissed, or you'll be given diversity training, which is the equivalent of a re-education camp. You're telling me that you're a free man? You're telling me that it's the America of your fathers? You're telling me this is the America that your father gave over to you as a baton? No, it's just that you haven't done as good a job as your father did in defending our freedoms. That's because you didn't stand up the way I did when they forced me to take diversity training at a corporation. I refused to listen to those perverted skunks. I was the only one in the entire room who stood up and said, I'm not listening to this lie. You're a liar and you're lying to us. I don't want to relive that. Guess what? I didn't get fired. The corporation decided never to have diversity training there. But you know what that fat, twisted, mean-faced, clipped-haired diversity trainer said to me with a sinister, quiet voice? She said, oh, your objection is interesting, she said. It's the same thing we heard from some admirals when we gave diversity training at the U.S. Naval Academy at Annapolis. I couldn't believe what I was listening to. This was 10 years ago. These twisted communist perverts were brainwashing our military 10 years ago. They were in there poisoning the minds of our military elite, and they had to sit through this garbage that the white man is bad, that perversion is normal, that America is evil, and et cetera. Do I have to give you any more than this? I don't want to give you anything more than the short postcard take on what goes on. But my point is that you're already living in a small Soviet-style world. You are being re-educated right now through diversity training. But you mark my words, if you don't stop this arc that we are on now, there will be re-education camps that people like I and you are sent to. And if you want to go to a re-education camp on a government holiday, good luck to you, because I won't go. Trust me, I won't go. I'll be in the mountains before I'll be in a re-education camp, and I hope you'll join me. I don't care what age I am. I'll be right back.
Savage.
This is the dawning of the age of Aquarius, age of Aquarius.
This is not the age of Aquarius on the Savage Nation. This is the age of Aries, my birth sign. Okay, they got the message. You know, I hear this music, I think of that old TV show, Cannon. Remember that guy, that fat guy? I like Broderick Crawford in Highway Patrol. I like Cannon, the kind of heavyset guys in police cruisers type of thing. You know, that was fun. Who is that character today? It was funny when I saw Tony Soprano was kind of a combination of Jackie Gleason in The Honeymooners and a few other characters amalgamated into a new form. McCain set sights on moderates. Did you see this rubbish? Faced with a crumbling Republican Party image, Senator Tom McCain, shoe salesman, is gambling on a general election strategy that relies on winning over conservative Democrats and independents, breaking with President Bush's 2004 game plan of focusing on the party's core voters. The article doesn't even say the core voters are conservatives. Notice there's no word on the word conservative anymore. This is in the Washington Times. They won't even use the dirty word conservative. I mean, it's amazing to me how everything is shifting right in front of our eyes. It's now a dirty word to say the word conservative. Well, then use a new word. How about using the word nationalist? Let's even make it stronger and clearer. Okay, I'm not a conservative. I'm a nationalist. It's much different. Borders, language, culture. What does that make me? Tell me what that makes me. I believe in borders, language, and culture. Does that make me a conservative? No, because the conservatives today are who? What do they stand for? Open markets, free trade, no borders, no language, and no culture. That's the conservatives of today stand for nothing but profit. And it's not even profit for Americans. It's profit for the international businesses. That's the so-called conservative Republican of today, if you want to call them anything. So it's hard to define me by those terms, liberal, conservative. Use a new one, nationalist. It works better. Chicago, Mark, welcome. You on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I want to thank you for everything that you're doing for us. And I want to just say that when I heard that guy from Russia speak about the experience with his dad, I had the same thing. My dad used to listen to TV really loud, so nobody would hear us.
He would turn up the TV with the official Russian stations on and then listen to the Voice of America quietly, huh?
He would turn them really loud, and in the other corner of the room, we'd listen to the Voice of America. And then in the morning, like on the weekend when I wasn't in school and he wasn't at work, he'd show me everything, made me remember what they said, and then we read the Polish newspapers. You know,
isn't that amazing? You know, but Mark, Americans don't understand what a government oppression truly is. They have been so brainwashed and lied to that they actually think that oppression is not what it is. They're being oppressed because they can't say what they believe to be true at work. That's oppression. You know, the worst form of oppression is not when somebody comes and knocks and breaks your door down for what you've listened to or what you said. The final form of oppression is when you're afraid to even say it or think it. Then they've controlled you totally. If they control your mind, they control you totally. And right now, I'm afraid to tell you, most Americans are controlled without anyone having to break their door in. They won't even say what they know to be true.
Yeah, I just...
Thanks for the call. That's how far gone we are. The soul has been stolen from this country after 30 to 40 years of oppression. So I've covered that. I've done a good job on it. I'm trying to warn you. And it's come up because Barack Obama is not a new phenomenon. Barack Obama is not a man who represents change. Barack Obama by himself is probably a decent man. But Barack Obama, make no mistake about it, represents something old and something very, very questionable. And that is the Soviet system. I know you haven't heard this. You didn't see it on Fox or CNN, so you don't believe it. But if you actually analyze what the man stands for, he's a stealth communist representation, a stealth communist representative. That is who Barack Obama is by his policies and by the inside man. Who is the inside man of Barack Obama? Do I have to play Wright again for you? Wright is a very charming snake. Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who I affectionately named the Shock Frock One, is a very charming snake. This is the man who went to Cuba in 1984 and visited with Fidel Castro, along with a few other luminaries from America, while men were being tortured in prisons in Cuba, including black men who wouldn't go along with the Soviet communist Cuban propaganda and mind control. And the same Reverend Wright didn't tell you that he was interested in anyone who opposed them. It's interesting, as I say to you again, look at the rhetoric and look at the words. Then I'm going to move on to something lighter. I realize that most people on a Friday don't want to hear this. And that is this. Men like me are called by the left wing in this country reactionaries. I tried to warn you that anyone who stood up to the Stalinist system was called a reactionary by the communists. So the true authentic scientist Vavilov was condemned as a reactionary, which was the death sentence, by the fake scientist Lysenko. And then because of that label, reactionary, he was stripped of his position, put in prison, and then starved to death. So when you hear the phrase reactionary and you don't know what it is, understand that the person using it is a stone-cold communist of the old Soviet era. But today they would call themselves a progressive. But the progressives of today are the equivalent of the Bolsheviks of the Soviet Union of the era between 1917 and 1924. And so be careful who you follow. Be careful who you listen to. Because although today it may be Michael Savage, nationalist, I can guarantee you, if you're a free thinker and you're only listening to me because you like to use your own mind, it won't be long before you too will be considered a reactionary.
Savage.
How come we don't hear this discussed in America? How come in all of the debates, this is the most minor topic when it's the number one topic facing most Americans? By the way, if you look at the economy, it's related to the illegal alien. You look at the environment, it's related to the illegal alien. You look at the crime rates, it's related to the illegal alien. You look at the drug problem, it's related to the illegal alien. You look at the illiteracy problem, it's related to the illegal alien. You look at the meltdown of our health care, it's related to the illegal alien. You look at the meltdown of our educational system, it's related to the illegal alien. How come not one candidate will tackle the illegal alien problem in this country? Not one of them. What you got to do is stop them now. No anchor babies. You don't breed yourself out of existence. Take a look at L.A. It looks like some nightmare out of Apocalypto. There are regions of L.A. the police won't go into. They feel like they're walking into a Mayan stage set where they could be taken to the top of a pyramid, have their hearts cut out, and roll down the pyramid. Why? Because of illegal aliens and the refusal to crack down on the illegal alien invasion. But look, I've owned this topic for 15 years. And has it gotten better or worse? Tell me. For 15 years, I've been like Paul Revere riding across the airwaves saying, the illegal alien is coming. The illegal alien is coming. The illegal alien is coming. Has it gotten worse or better? Terrible, terrible. But you go on, life goes on. Have you been to an emergency room recently? Who do you think's paying the bill? You are. That's why they can send money home to their home country, because they don't pay for medical care. The reason they don't pay for medical care is because our system is broken. So it says the number of the people sending remittances home, blah, 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 has gone down. And we're supposed to bleed over it now. More than 3 million Latin American immigrants in the U.S. responding to the economic downturn. And new uncertainties about their future have stopped sending money home to their families in the last 2 years. I'm supposed to worry about that? That they're not sucking money out of America and sending it home? That's a problem for me now? Only 50% of some 19 million Latino immigrants in this country. Now, that's an interesting figure. Where'd they come up with 18.9 million Latino immigrants when we hear the number is 10 million from the left wing? I've told you it's closer to 30 million when you include the children. 18.9 million, 73%. 73% sent money home 2 years ago. Now only 50% send money home. Okay. And how much is it? It says estimated total remittances to Latin America at $46 billion in 2008. $46 billion? That's a lot of money. Where are they getting it from? Where's the money coming from? How come they can send home $46 billion? How is that possible? The survey was conducted in Spanish with a sample of 5,000 interviews and a margin of error of 1 percentage point. Oh, really? So you can do a survey like that, and you can tell me that $46 billion was sent out of the country because they're not paying taxes on it? That's interesting. Why not put a transfer tax on money that's sent out of the country? Why not slap a 35% tax on any money going out of the country, particularly from illegal immigrants? Just do that. Now, what would that do? Let's see how that would do if you have common sense. Well, I'm the one calling for export controls on wheat and rice and soybeans, for example. Why have I said we should put export controls on our wheat, our rice, and our soybeans, despite what the farmers say? The reason is we'll wind up starving to death if we don't stop this. We'll be like Zimbabwe. We won't be able to feed ourselves. You know, you see, you say can't happen here. You say the wheat fields can't disappear. You don't understand anything about the sweep of geographical time or history. I do. In fact, it's pretty well known that northern Africa, where you see sand dunes, were once forested regions. But because of greed, because of the greedy pigs of several centuries ago, perhaps further back in time than that, the forests were cut down and denuded, the soil washed off into the Mediterranean Sea, and the land became nothing could be grown on it. That's because there were pigs back in those countries a long time ago who took all the timber for a quick profit, just as you see here, because they're not controlled by the government. The government's supposed to be the husband of the land. They're supposed to husband and protect the land and the people. That's what we pay the money for, protect us from enemies foreign and domestic. One of the things you do is you protect your food source. And the way you do that is you stop the greedy pigs. So you put export controls on wheat, rice, soybeans. And what you do is you stop them from selling it to China, or else wind up with nothing left here except websites.
Savage.
And as we all know, you can't eat websites. And of course, we may get a candidate one day who says, let them eat websites, but we haven't heard that yet. Gay activists shut down APA panel, says the article. The American Psychiatric Association suddenly canceled an upcoming workshop on religion and homosexuality during its annual conference here after so-called gay activists, they're really gay fascists, campaigned against the two evangelicals slated to appear on the panel. Planners of the symposium, Homosexuality and Therapy, the Religious Dimension, originally slated for 2 to 5 p.m. Monday at the Washington Convention Center, at first ignored calls from some homosexuals to cancel the event. But when its star panelist, the only openly gay New Hampshire Episcopal Bishop Gene Robinson, dropped out last week, plans for the symposium collapsed amid an avalanche of criticism from homosexuals. In other words, they became radical again, and they attacked it. Why? Because there were several evangelicals who were formerly homosexual who were going to talk about being formerly homosexual. And as you well know, there's nothing worse for the homosexual agenda than for someone to say they were formerly a homosexual and found God. That's the worst nightmare for the radicals. And so they went back to form. They became vicious, and they became dangerous. And, of course, they closed down the American Psychiatric Association meeting. This is what used to go on in the Soviet Union. Scientists were intimidated. Microphones were cut off. Scientists were beaten up, etc. And so if you think this is not an example of what I was talking about before, I disagree with you. That's all. And so that's another topic. Now let's go to the callers, 1-800-449-8255. I want to ask you a question. I'm going to take 2 minutes of your time. I'm going to take 2 minutes of your valuable time on Friday to ask a question. But first, I'm going to play rock and roll in order to loosen you up so that I can get some good callers on this. I'll do it Monday. I'll give you what the question is for Monday. How's that? You have all weekend to think about it. And on Monday, you'll be given a short test on this question. So please have a short paragraph ready for this question. I'm in the midst of planning my autobiography. So, you know, I'm indulging myself now. And in my autobiography, I have a choice. I have two roads before me. One will be only my childhood family stories with really almost no political point to any of them. It'll be simply my life, and here's what happened, and here's the stories. Many of the stories that you've come to hear, to love, that you've heard on the show, that's all it will be. Another version of the same book will be a childhood story, and then with a political point attached to it, along the lines of what I had in The Enemy Within. In other words, I'll tell you a story, and then I'll relate the story to a political truth. I'm tending towards one way rather than the other, and I'd like to know what you personally would rather have to buy and to hold and to take home. I mean, I think I know what you'd rather have, but I'm not sure. And so I'm going to do a poll, a verbal poll for Monday, not for today. Tomorrow I'm going to Los Angeles, and I'm going to go to the De La Hoya fight. It's at the, I don't know where it is, some huge arena down there. It should be amazing. I mean, De La Hoya today, I don't know how the man does it, if you're a fight fan. This guy's a phenomenon. He owns Golden Boy Productions, which is, of course, a fighting stable of great fighters. He's a promoter, in other words. He started out as a great boxer, then he got smart. He didn't want to wind up like a guy in the street, you know, a punch drunk without a dime. So he represented fighters. He's like a Don King, in other words. He's a Hispanic Don King, an extremely wealthy man. Now he's in his mid-30s, very handsome man, huge draw at fights because the women love him because he's so good-looking. He's like a movie star good-look guy, and he can really box. Now he's coming back to fight, and so the draw is going to be enormous. And I'm going to be there. It'll be fun. It's interesting to me because there's certain movie stars who are at every fight I go to. They're real fight fans. Jack Nicholson is always there in a row ahead of me. You see a lot of the rap stars there, 50 Cent. A lot of these guys, I don't know whether they go there because they love fighting or because they want to be seen. And it's a real spectacle. I don't know what it is, but whatever. That's where I met John McCain a while ago, much to his chagrin, because I'm not one of the moderates he's trying to court. I'm definitely not one of the moderates. Let's see, that's Saturday night. Sunday is a long, boring, slow day in Los Angeles. I'll probably go to the museum. They have a great museum there, by the way. Great museum. And then I'm going to do my show from Los Angeles on Monday, which I always enjoy. It gives me a different look and I don't know, different energy. God knows why. I'm one of the people who love L.A. It's like I'm almost embarrassed to say, living in the San Francisco area, you're not supposed to like L.A. more, but I do. I do, and for many different reasons. Not like more. I like it. I really like the dynamics of it. It's a bigger city. What would you like to talk about on the Savage Nation, Reverend Wright? That is. I keep forgetting what I named them. The Shock Frock one. Well, how about Shock Frock 2? Let me go back to Shock Frock 2. That's the new reverend in the same extremist communist church, the Trinity Baptist Church, the anti-American, anti-white church, in my opinion. A man named Pastor Otis Moss. And he were calling Shock Frock 2. Let's hear 03.
But if you make the decision to move where you're from, God will show you things you never thought that you would possibly be able to see because you had the audacity to move from your current condition. But I love what these brothers do. I love how they interact because we notice here that the disease they have could not determine their destiny. You see, there still are lepers. They still have a skin disease. They had a skin disease. They had a skin disease. Based on their skin condition, they were considered to be second-class citizens. They had a skin issue. They had a skin disease, and the lepers lived in a leper project. The lepers had bad health care. The lepers were disrespected. They had funny names for lepers. The lepers were considered inferior. They had an inferior school system. The lepers lived in a ghetto leper colony. The lepers were segregated from everybody else.
See, another hater has appeared, Shock Frock 2. Everything he said is a lie. Everything he said is a lie with regard to his life and his time. Of course, it was true 100 years ago, but it isn't true for most people today. And let me give you an example. He says the lepers had a name and they had a bad school system. I taught in that leper colony. I didn't consider it a leper colony. I taught in an all-black school when I was very, very young in an early school. When I was one of my early careers was social worker, and then I was a seventh and ninth grade science teacher in Queens, New York. I taught in an all-black school in South Jamaica, and I'm proud to tell you that I was able to communicate with the people in a certain way. And I'm going to tell you what I did. It's a very interesting story. When I taught in that school, I remember I had taught in a few white schools, all lily white schools before, and for some reason I was assigned to that school, and I took it. Now, the kids were very, very interesting. They were very interesting. They were poor. All of them were poor. I walk in, young white kid, teacher, looks very young. I get up there and I tell him my name on the blackboard, and I said to them, I'm paid to teach you science, and I'm going to teach you science the best I can. On my desk, I have a copy of the newspaper. If you people start fighting with each other, if you kids start yelling, if you start mocking me or anyone else, I'm going to sit down, and I'm not going to call the principal. I'm not going to give you a demerit. I said, I'm just going to read the newspaper with my feet up on the desk because it's your time you're taking from the other kids. So now let's begin by talking about what an atom is. And I turn to the blackboard and I start to talk. Sure enough, 2 seconds later, there's some kind of banging going back and screaming. Well, eventually the girls got up and started to beat up the boys to stop them. They would say, now you be quiet. Dr. Savage wants to teach us. Actually, it was Mr. Savage at the time. Mr. Savage wants to teach us. Now you stop it. The girls took control of that classroom and stopped the young boys from acting out. And it worked. I never had an incident where I had to call a principal. Never. Now, I don't know whether that would work today. I can't say that I would assure that system would work today with all the drugs. But don't think it was a picnic then. There were some kids who were totally dysfunctional that had whiskey bottles in their pockets that fell out of their pockets during the class then. And they were pretty tough. And I remember once two of the kids got into a fight, and these guys were really going at each other. Man, they were throwing punches. And you know who stopped them? The girls jumped up, and they stopped them. You wouldn't want to get between the two of them, I'll tell you that, because next door there was another white teacher, and he jumped in between two kids. They were seventh graders, but they were big guys. He got his He jumps in between two kids who are fighting in the back, and he got punched in the face. You know what he did? He goes running to the principal, and he makes a big issue out of it. During the break, I said to him, you know, you're crazy. What are you bringing charges against the kids for? They were fighting. You try to break it up, and you got punched in the face. They weren't even aiming for you. You stuck your stupid face between their fight. Well, needless to say, I didn't make a friend. I made an enemy because I was always marching to a different Hummer. I'll be right back.
Savage.
No more esoteric anti-communism. It's the Savage Nation with Rock and Roll Friday. Want some good news? Here's some good news. Give me another 30 seconds of this music. Not that good. Here's some good news. You know Red Ken, the mayor of London, the anti-American, anti-Semitic, anti-everything that you believe in mayor, who made a mockery of everything that Britain once stood for. He just got defeated. He suffered a huge election bloodbath in London. The first conservative has been elected London mayor in 30 years. It's interesting to me that England has finally awakened because of the Islamic invasion. And make no mistake about it, it's because of the out-of-control crime. It's because of the Islamization of London, calling it Londonistan. The conservatives have won. They threw the communist bum out. We in America, though, have not yet had the problem that they have in Europe, although we're going to have it after this next election, at which point it may be too late to do what the English have finally done, what the Italians have finally done, what most of Western Europe has finally done, which is finally stand up to the juggernaut of Islamization and of wild, out-of-control immigration. So we have to go through a lot worse before it gets better. But in England, the mayor's race is over. Ken Livingstone's eight-year reign of hell is over. The conservative candidate won with a huge victory. Record turnout, by the way. And it's over. It is over. So now Red Ken could probably go to work for Obama when he becomes ambassador to Zimbabwe. Red Ken could go to work for him on that. British Prime Minister suffers election bloodbath. Well, of course, it's not British Prime Minister. It's radical communist. Red Ken, he's known as. The new mayor is a conservative. Huge story. Boris Johnson, big bear of a Brit, the type that could throw logs. The old line Brit, the type that picked up stones and throw them at the king's men. That's who just won. And the esoteric effete Red Ken was thrown out on his bum. On his bum, yes. I actually meant it. The bum was thrown out on his bum. Surprise how sometimes the slip of the tongue leads you to the correct light at the end of the tunnel. Anyway, that's the news. It's important news. Of course, it won't be played very big in America because that would be very bad for Obama and very bad for Hillary. So I don't expect big play tomorrow. Instead, I expect pictures of Obama next to statues of JFK with the sunlight glinting off both. San Diego, Vanessa, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Oh, it's such an honor to speak with you, Dr. Savage. I made my own bumper sticker. It said, Michael Savage equals the voice of reason. And someone defaced my car and put a T in front of it. So I had to take it off my car because that's not the message I was trying to get across. I think.
Well, you can't do anything about vandalism unless you catch the person. And then I doubt that in San Diego they would prosecute a vandal of that kind. I think they would probably give him an award.
Probably, but I just want you to keep up the good work, get that word out. More people need to...
I will. I can't help it if there's a lunatic coward out there. There's plenty of them. Another woman's calling, WOR New York. Laura, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes. Thank you, doctor, for taking my call. I've been trying to get through for a long time, so I'm really happy to be able to speak to you. I've been listening for, I don't know, maybe a year now, and I'm finally glad to hear that somebody is speaking the simple, honest truth. I was just listening to you talking about science, you know, science in this country. And
can you hold on because we're coming right up to the end of the hour, and I'll be back at the top side or the other side of the top. Red Ken is dead. Long live Britain.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
I don't like it. It's terrible. Welcome to the Savage Nation. It was supposed to be Rock and Roll Friday, but not with that tune. How about something else? God, give me something else that I kind of like from the... Break the record. Give me the one where I play the producer, the one I said I was going to play the producer. Which one was that? That's better. All right, very good. Give him $150. Make him sign the entire thing over to me. I give him $300 in the joint. I tell her I'm the writer producer. I'll hear from us in 100 years. I'm playing producer of the 60s, that's all. Turn it off already. It's garbage. No wonder the 60s was so bad on the people's mind. The music, some of it, was so discordant. Who could listen to it? That's why I play it, in order to attract your broken attention. I'm giving you the good news of the day. Hello, good news. Red Ken, the communist filth from London, has been thrown out of office on his bum in England. The election just came out, and a conservative, the first conservative in 30 years, has won in London. Now, why did this happen in liberal, merry old London? One, the Islamic invasion. Two, the crime rate is out of control. The people have had enough of communism, socialism, left-wingism, so they threw Red Ken out even in London. We have not yet had enough of the Islamization of America or of illegal immigration, so we have no candidates to vote for. In fact, Tom McCann, the shoe salesman, has come out nakedly and said he's not even going to appeal to the core conservatives that put Bush in power. He's going to abandon you. He's going to work on conservative Democrats and so-called moderates. He's finished. Tom McCann is finished. He's not going to get elected because millions of you will not vote for anybody. And if Tom McCann is not smart enough to understand that he's not fit to be president, if Tom McCann's bartender who's running his campaign is not smart enough to understand that you are the core of America, particularly for a Republican, then they're not entitled to the election. Period. And I'm going to say right now that it looks pretty bad. If you wanted McCain, it's over. I would suspect at this point, if I was a betting man, that it's going to be Hillary. But I don't want to talk about it. I'm sick of it all. I am so sick of it that I'm not going to talk about politics. That's why I talk more about the ex-Soviet Union and how we become very much, in some ways, like Soviet light in this country. And now I'll take your calls. Canada. Stephen, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Mr. Savage. I'm calling from Vancouver. I'm listening on the internet through the Los Angeles station. And I'm British, but I emigrated to Canada. By the way, I went through a 5-year legal immigration process, and that's probably...
You see, if you wanted to get instant citizenship, what you should have done is grown a mustache and waded across the Rio Grande.
Well, I was actually in the London police, and I spent a long time working in the Middle East, and I came...
There you go. That's another blow against you. A, you're white. B, you speak English perfectly. And C, you were a policeman. We can't have that. What we need are drug dealers and rapists who are illegals. That's the kind of person the liberal loves.
Can I tell you something about the London thing?
Yes.
I was in the London police, and first of all, it wasn't just a London mayor election. There was a huge election around the UK for local councillors, and the left-wing Labour Party didn't just lose the London election. They lost all across Britain. The Conservative Party won 44% of the national vote. The Socialist, which is Gordon Brown, won 24%. So there was a huge swing to the conservatives in the UK.
Okay, so is it because of the out-of-control crime and also the Islamization of England? Is that what did this?
Yes, we've had 13 years of a socialist government, which has been telling us that multiculturalism is wonderful. There's been a massive reaction against that. But Ken Livingstone, I'm not sure if you know this, before he became mayor, he was actually for 15 years, he was a member of the British Communist Party.
Mm.
He's very anti-Semitic. He's made some very anti-Semitic comments. He's made lots.
Well, the American left is totally anti-Semitic, even though many of them are Jews. They hate themselves, and that's why they're anti-Semitic. But we won't go into the psychopathology of the American Jewish left right now. We'll save that for another year. So there's been a revolution in England, and the revolution is to the right. The communists have been thrown out, but the principal reasons are out-of-control immigration and the Islamization of England.
There was a 44% vote for conservatives. There was a 23% vote for the Labour Socialist Party. As you know...
Great. What news? Now, if only America understood politics, we'd have the same revolution here. Unfortunately, we have not yet had an outright communist run the country, but we're very close to it with Obama. Because I'll tell you right now, Obama's rhetoric and Obama's belief system is almost identical to that of Red Ken, only he's been very clever at how he's sold it to the American people. Thank you for the call. I don't need confirmation. I know I'm right. San Diego, Barry, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
We're already in a sort of a parallel Soviet society here. And when I was listening to Dmitry, I was so taken by his passion and his statements that I just got goosebumps, and I just had to call. And
well, so far, you don't have to run the water in the bathtub to listen to Michael Savage on the radio, do you, for fear that the police will break in from San Diego because you're listening to a conservative radio? Has that happened yet in San Diego? Is it illegal to listen to me?
Well, no, it's still legal.
It's still legal. Well, they'll be working on that real soon. KFMB is still legal. They haven't burned down. They haven't broken the radio tower down. You know, San Diego used to be such a conservative city. It was known as a Navy town. When I first moved to California in the mid-70s, I actually loved going to San Diego. You had a high that you went there if you were in San Francisco from your so-called friends. If I like got away for the weekend with the young children, I whisper, I'm going to San Diego. Oh, why do you want to go to that Navy town for? Well, I loved it. It was so family-oriented. And then slowly but surely, it turned into a San Francisco-like cesspool. And that's the problem. The cesspool of San Francisco has seeped out to most of the West Coast, where if you painted the map, you'd have to paint the entire West Coast red. And I don't mean for the misnomer of Red America. Red for Red Ken style government. That ranges from Seattle to San Diego. It's hard to say where the conservative core of America is. I suspect it's in the Southeast, but that's the area that is rarely, if ever, heard from. That is the hardcore Christian conservative base of the Republican Party is still left in the Southeast. It's virtually gone everywhere else. Save your conservative dollars. The movement will rise again. We should put out conservative dollars. All right. We're going to hear with Heather McDonald on Reverend Wright, Shock Frock 1, the minute we come back from this very important series of messages right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
By now, everyone's heard the statements made by Barack Obama's longtime minister, the shock frock Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Our guest, Heather McDonald, has written an article on cityjournal.org, which you have probably heard about first here on the Savage Nation. Heather McDonald, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on again. It's a real pleasure.
Tell us a little about your article.
Well, Jeremiah Wright promotes some of the most extreme Afrocentric pedagogy in the country, taking his cue from the Ed schools that have had enormous influence already on the classroom. He thinks that there's an inherent difference in the way whites and blacks think. This is pure bogus genetics. There's no basis for the claims that he's making. He claims that whites think analytically, that whites are capable of sitting quietly at their desks and listening to a teacher or sitting in a library carrel and studying for their PhD, but he thinks it is the black way of being in class to be crawling all over their teachers or disrupting class. And he cites, believe it or not, education professors across the country who have put out this idea. And so, in other words, if a teacher is going to try and maintain strict discipline in her class, this is disrespecting the uniquely black way of learning.
Is the good reverend just making excuses for his student to act up?
He is trying to rationalize the real. The fact is that there are horrible discipline problems in schools now, partly because schools have their hands tied because of a whole line of absurd civil rights litigation that says that students have all sorts of due process rights, but also because of the breakdown of the inner city family. And so kids are coming into class not ever having experienced stable, reasonable discipline at home and do present real challenges to a teacher. But Wright then, and these academics that he cites, simply say, well, this is a normal state of affairs, and to try and correct it is to misunderstand black culture. He's giving a recipe for preserving into the indefinite future black underclass educational dysfunction and the huge test score gap between blacks on the one hand and whites and Asians on the other.
So instead of putting the blame on lack of family structure and discipline, he's blaming genetics?
Amazingly so. You know, and the irony, of course, is that in the left-wing academy, any mention of genetic differences is viewed as completely taboo. The received wisdom in universities now is that race is a social construct. Any scientific biologist or geneticist who's doing research on racial differences better keep his work very, very secret. But Wright is proposing completely bogus genetics. I mean, he, in his NAACP speech, he was saying that there was something inherent about blacks' preference for music that stresses the second and fourth beats of a measure, whereas whites prefer the first and the third. This is Louis Farrakhan stuff. This is so far out beyond the universe of actual scientific thought. But yes, he is claiming that whites and blacks are separated by a cognitive divide. And it gets into this whole issue of different learning styles, so that it's, again, a white racist construct to think that black students should be able to engage in analytic, rational debate. The question is, again, you know, what is Obama's view on all of this? Wright's presentation was extravagant, wacky, but it was extremely polished. These are obviously ideas that he's been working on for decades. And they've been around for decades, and they have permeated, unfortunately, to the utter destruction of our school system. They've permeated schools for decades. And, you know, Obama's been happy to just sit there and let this wash over him. I think there's much, much more that the press has to do to put him on the spot and say, do you believe also in an Afrocentric curriculum? Wright was also claiming that one of the most absurd charlatans that has come across the pike, Asa Hilliard, who was at Georgia State University, who promoted a Afrocentric curriculum that was based on utter falsehood. Things like Egypt is a black country, Western civilization is stolen from black Africa, Beethoven is black, Robert Browning is black. Hilliard promoted this as essential to black academic success, and Wright said, Hilliard tells us how to fix the schools. So this is the message that people were shouting about and cheering at the NAACP that they've obviously been absorbing in Wright's Trinity Church. The question is, does Obama go along with it?
Wright's message on crime is just unbelievable to me.
Wright basically said, let's all not fool ourselves. We're all committing crime. Only some of us have been incarcerated for it. He said he criticized people who are condemn criminals, because the only difference between those who condemn criminals and those who are in jail are that some of the ones in jail actually got caught. And this, again, has echoed for me a woman who's at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. She was also taught at Harvard, and she has gone around promoting the idea of celebrating black underclass culture, and a law review article that she had in 92 in the California Law Journal said that blacks should embrace the lawbreakers among them and see criminal behavior, low-level criminal behavior, as a way of fighting the white power structure. And she particularly singled out black employees who pilfer from their employers and spread the contraband, the stolen merchandise, around their neighborhoods. And she again was saying, I kid you not, that this form of behavior should be embraced by all blacks as something authentically black and a way of rectifying racial injustices. So this Regina Austin, this University of Pennsylvania law professor, has also celebrated teen pregnancy. She celebrated prostitution as an exciting life in the public sphere. And this is the type of insanity that gets done in law schools under the rubric of something called critical race studies, which is a endeavor undertaken largely by minority professors to say that the law is inherently racist, that there is no such thing as logical, unpoliticized thinking. And a lot of this critical race studies jurisprudence takes the form of people telling personal sob stories about how they've been discriminated against because of their hair and other essential legal matters.
Why is the midstream media so reluctant to connect Obama and his relationship with the shock frock right? We're talking 20 years here. Are they just giving him a pass, of course?
They're giving Obama a complete pass on his connection to right. There's simply no question about it. Obama is lying through his teeth when he says he's only now become aware of right's more extreme statements. The only thing that the media has been willing to seize upon are the 9/11 statements and the AIDS conspiracy statements, which are so extreme that everybody's got to look at them. But they have ignored completely the long list of Afrocentric charlatans that right has embraced. I think the media is so proud of itself for backing a black man and is so persuaded that by assenting to the notion of widespread white racism, that they are somehow morally superior to the rest of Americans, that they don't want to put pressure in a completely colorblind manner. I mean, it's merely asking Obama, doesn't matter whether he's a white or a black candidate, do you believe in Afrocentric pedagogy? But I think the media is just worried about coming down hard on a black man, and so I think Obama is given a free pass.
Heather McDonald, thank you for doing the research and for being with us here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Bits and pieces about the genocide going on in Darfur keep coming out, but we never hear the details of what's really going on there. Former Marine Captain Brian Steedel was there as an official military observer. He gained access to parts of the country that no journalist could penetrate. He's filmed a movie picked up by National Geographic called The Devil Came on Horseback, and he is here to talk about what's really happening there. Brian Steedel, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, tell us something about your background.
I grew up as a Navy brat, and I was in the Marine Corps for 4.5 years. I got out of the Marine Corps at the end of 2003, and then got a contract job in Sudan, where I spent the first 7 months in the Nuba Mountains and the last 6 months in Darfur with the African Union.
How did the idea for the movie come about?
We, after returning, were looking at all the different options of telling the story of Darfur and trying to reach the broadest audience possible. And one of the projects was to shoot and develop a documentary film, The Devil Came on Horseback, which premiered at Sundance. And from there, National Geographic picked it up for distribution through the television, which we thought was a wonderful way to reach, thousands, tens of thousands of more people.
What is it exactly about?
Well, it's about my time in Sudan. Basically, it's a story told through my eyes of what I observed and different ways that I, tried to bring awareness around this issue so that the world could know about it and also act upon it.
What are the specifics of Darfur?
Well, it's basically a rebellion formed up in 2003, started to attack the government back. This was based upon the lack of development by the government, by the marginalization of the communities within Darfur, which are ethnically African tribes the government is mainly Arab tribe. There is no religious difference between the two different groups. They are all Muslim, and that is a common misunderstanding. So they're all Muslim. It is an Arab government versus an African population. And the government had begun attacks in the early 90s against this population, trying to drive them off the land, take the resources from them, and basically marginalize them from the greater population of Sudan.
So you're saying this is actually a race war?
Yes, that's true.
Why is this still going on?
Well, the United Nations has passed more than 20 resolutions against Sudan, specifically because of this issue, and none of those have really been implemented to their full capability. The international community doesn't stand up and defend these people because there is a lack of resources for outside world, a lack of interest from an outside world. So the genocide continues. The government has continued to allow to kill its people, and the people are left trying to defend themselves against the government.
Why haven't we heard more about this?
I think for a number of different reasons. First off, it's very hard for journalists to get into Darfur. If they get into Sudan at all, it's very hard to get a travel permit to go to Darfur, to get a photography permit, a videography permit, to shoot evidence in Darfur. A few individuals have snuck across the border from Chad into Darfur and have taken their pictures and released those. And so it's very hard to cover the issue. The only thing that press basically has to go by is UN reports and aid agency reports. And so it's a difficult issue to cover. And because of that, there isn't much coverage on it.
Well, why don't we hear that this is a race war?
I think a lot of people get confused with the current conflict in Darfur and what occurred over 20-some years in the south, where it was an Arab-Muslim government fighting against an African-Christian and animist south. That lasted for 20 years. More than 2 million people lost their lives in that fight, which led to the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which was signed. The Comprehensive Peace Agreement right now hangs on a thread because the government of Sudan is not implementing some of the peace protocols. The people in the south are, again, growing frustrated with the government that agreed to things and wouldn't sign it. So there is a lot of highlight on that issue. And Darfur is a completely separate issue, and so people kind of confuse the two occasionally because it's within the same country.
Why hasn't the rest of the media stepped up the coverage on this issue so that more people hear about what's going on?
The basic answer to that is I have no idea. I mean, there's a lot of interest behind this issue. There are populations, whether they're at universities or church groups or community groups all over the United States and all over the world, that are very interested in this issue, want it to be covered more, want to know more about it, want to know what they can do to try to influence our government, influence the United Nations and other corporations that are involved with it, the highlighting of the Olympics, and the fact that China buys 80% of its oil from Sudan, 80% of Sudan's oil. Of that money, 70% is used to fund this war in Darfur. So there's been a lot of concentration on those different issues, yet we still don't see it in the mainstream. We are caught up in issues like the election and Iraq and Afghanistan, and so this takes a back page to the rest of those stories.
What do you think we need to do to get this taken care of?
Well, I think first off, I think education is one of the biggest issues, and I think that's why the documentary film that's going to be airing on National Geographic will be able to educate people on what's really happening on the ground. They'll be able to see it with their own eyes, and from there then they can go ahead and take action. I think in order for people to take action and want to change something, they have to know about the situation first, and it's a very hard situation to kind of grasp. What's the most difficult about it and why it's hard to grasp is what motivates individuals to go kill another individual, to burn their homes down, to rape them because they're simply a different race. That's something that I think the developed world doesn't quite understand. It's something I don't understand, yet it happens all around the world. And so to try to explain that to people is a little bit difficult. The most important thing is to basically let them know that this is what's happening and that there are things that we can do to try to influence our government, influence the United Nations, influence corporations that are sponsors of China, influence China to be more involved in this issue.
You've seen these atrocities firsthand?
Absolutely. I was there on the front lines with the African Union. Our mission was to monitor this ceasefire, not to intervene. We had no capability to intervene, nor did we have a mandate to intervene, but it was to monitor. And my responsibility was, as a photographer, to take pictures, to document these atrocities that we are seeing, and that's exactly what I did. I took several thousand photographs while I was there.
Do you see anything that says that we're trying to help in Darfur?
I think that the United States is trying to put pressure on the United Nations to, you know, get a deployed force on the ground that can stop the violence. I think that we are, you know, putting whatever pressures we can on the Sudanese government, which is very little because we have tremendous sanctions imposed against the Sudanese government already because they're a state sponsor of terrorism. I don't think we have too much leverage with China to force China into intervening in the situation. They have tremendous amount of influence over Sudan. So I think that we're doing a lot, yet I think we can do more. I think we can get very creative on some of the aspects that we can do, from enforcing no-fly zones to prohibiting ships that enter Sudan into coming into the United States. There are other things that I think that we can do to influence the situation that we're not doing yet.
But why do you think we're not doing any more?
I think the main reason that we're not doing anything is because we have nothing to gain from it. And that's a sad thing to say, but that's true. Our government's responsibility is to protect our personal interests, the interests of their people. And so if their people have nothing to gain from the situation, such as economics or, you know, securing our sovereignty, then we won't be involved in that situation. If Sudan had large resources that we wanted or that we needed, then we probably would go in. The oil they have is about the same amount as Texas has, and China, as I said, is buying around 80% of that. So we don't really have any type of economic situation to gain from stopping what's going on. The people who are interested, you know, once they learn about this issue, what can they do to try to make a difference? And there are many different organizations on college campuses, through church groups, awareness organizations that are out there. I helped found an organization called HOPE, standing for Helping Other People Everywhere. And we are working on raising awareness in the United States as well as contributing to existing programs all throughout the world. We just came back from a 5-week trip in Africa where we assisted 6 different organizations in expanding their operations to help hundreds and hundreds of more people. So I'd encourage people to go check out hopeartists.org, where they can find out more on how they themselves can contribute to the situation and try to stop what's going on.
Captain Steedle, thank you for joining us on the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on.
Savage.
Tsunami has hit England, which they were calling gone. They counted England out. You know, I've played. There's no England anymore. Maybe there is an England to look forward to. There's been a bloodbath across England for the communist, socialist, labor left. They've been swept out of office. Labor has lost well over 400 seats in local elections across England and Wales. The conservatives, I repeat the word, the dirty word that John McCain refuses to utter, the conservatives have gained 300 seats in 9 councils. This is incomprehensible. By the way, the results were beyond the worst predicted by most analysts. So every pollster was completely wrong, as they are in America. The pollsters are owned by the two-party system. The pollsters are always wrong. They've been wrong, 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 wrong. Gordon Brown and the communist labor left is out in England. 200 seats lost was very bad. 300 seats lost was chronic. Right now, they're in panic territory because the conservatives have won. Play Living on a Thin Line.
All the stories have been told of kings in days of old, but there's no England now. All the wars that were won or lost somehow don't seem to matter very much anymore.
It gives me hope we could save America.
All the lies we were told, all the lives of the people running round their castles are burned.
We do not have a conservative candidate in America. It's a sham. It's a fraud. McCain is a far-left candidate. Hillary is a left candidate. Barack Obama is an outright communist by his rhetoric and by his pastor's insights into his soul. Well, maybe there isn't England anymore. Maybe there will be an England some more. Unbelievable. Who would have expected that Londonistan has a chance to survive? Maybe they'll throw those dirty bums out of their country. Maybe they'll finally throw them out. I hear they're leaving. Did you hear that story? On MichaelSavage.com, we have all the news that's fit to print. I'll say it's all the news that I select is fit to print. And there's a very interesting story that I put up earlier today. It's up, Communist London Mayor Badly Beaten. It shouldn't be buried in the right middle. It should be on the top right, but okay, it will be up there soon. There was an earlier story that should be linked to it that's astonishing. Illegal immigrants are now trying to escape Britain. Listen to this one. Asylum seekers cite lack of sunshine and bad health care as reasons for exodus. Many of them were from Iraq and Afghanistan. They say they're going to try to go to Italy, where there is better health care and more sunshine. So the Italians are now going to be hit with a flood of Afghanis and Iraqis now that they're leaving England because they didn't get the gold-plated health care that the illegal aliens get in America. See, if we cut off the health care in America and we really got tough, most of them would self-deport, as I defined it a long time ago. If we had a truly conservative candidate, he'd win by a landslide. If there was a true conservative candidate, I don't know how many different times I have to tell you this, that candidate, there'd be no race right now. All of this garbage that the pollsters are running, the media's running, would be irrelevant. You, the people, are the ultimate pollster, and you haven't been heard from yet. So far, it's all been horse baloney. It's been horse baloney made of horse meat, and I mean rotten horse meat so far. If we had a true conservative candidate, he'd win by 20 to 25 points across America. And if we had truly conservative candidates, they'd sweep the leftist bums out on their tuxedos. But we don't. We have not yet sunk far enough into the morass that they did in England, where the crime rates were out of control, where the mosques were superseding the churches. Dare I say the truth? May I tell you the truth? They had had enough of this. Screaming, die, die, die. You remember that one? Do you have that soundbite of what they were screaming in the streets of London, the radical Islamists, which we're not allowed to hear anymore in this country? You know, see if you can find that one. Wake them up out there in Savage Land. Maybe they'll come to understand what's coming to a neighborhood near them. But the fact of the matter is the Islamists are going to be shaking in their boots tonight because they're no longer going to be the favorite child of England. In fact, many of them come there, as you well know, and they have 10, 12 children, and they live on welfare. And they curse the country, and they plot overthrowing the nation. The people saw it. The politicians, whether they saw it or not, is irrelevant. They were cowardly, and they were thrown out. Play the clip.
Down, down, USA!
Down, down, USA!
Nuke, nuke, Washington!
Nuke, nuke, Washington!
Bomb, bomb, Pentagon!
Bomb, bomb, Pentagon!
Death to Tony Blair!
Death to Tony Blair!
Death to George Bush!
Death to George Bush!
Now, this was chanted in the streets of London by bums on welfare who came in under asylum rules. They were mainly attendants of the Finsley Mosque. I'm not sure. It was in North London where most of these anti-English, anti-Western, anti-white radicals congregate. In a sane nation, they would have thrown them all out. All of them would have been ejected immediately. They would have been given a summary judgment and thrown out of the country. Nobody votes themselves into extinction. No country on earth permits people to come in who want to kill them. No country on earth ever has, and no sane country on earth ever should. But, okay, it happened in England finally. They had had enough. They threw out the liberals. They threw out the communists. They threw out the socialists. They threw out the Labor Party. And it's the Finsbury Mosque, Finsbury Park Mosque. And now there's been a revolution, a conservative sweep in London. Why am I getting a red flash? Does that mean I have to go? I just did a break. Of course it's a mistake. It's okay. I get a mistake every day. Everybody does. It's a long been week. It's a long week. And I would like to ask the listener, do you think this country is ready for a conservative candidate, yes or no? Are you sick and tired of voting for a radical socialist, a radical communist, or a liberal? Because that's the choice you have right now. Only the media is so clever that they have cast McCain as a conservative when, of course, he's anything but a conservative. McCain is not a conservative. McCain is a classic liberal. Hillary is a classic leftist. Obama is a classic socialist or communist. There's no question in my mind that we have three choices. None of them are conservative. None of them are conservative. It's all a sham. And unless we have a sweep of the type we've just seen in England, this country is in for a couple of very bad years, if not decades. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I can guarantee you that this victory in England will be swept under the rug, page 2 to 10 in your local rag, but it will be page 1, top right, on the Savage website, michaelsavage.com, the home of the Savage Nation tonight. And again, I want to remind you, I am in a fight for my life. I am in a fight for freedom of speech. I cannot afford to lose to radical Islamists. You cannot afford to have me lose to these radical Islamists in care. I have not talked about it. I try to keep it quiet because I don't want to constantly make appeals. But let me tell you, let me just tell you that every dollar that you contribute to the Savage Legal Defense Fund helps. It helps because I'm going to fight them all the way to the Supreme Court, no matter how much it costs and no matter how long it takes. And that is because when we get to discovery, they're going to have to disclose who their donors are. And to this day, nobody's been able to find out who is donating money to CAIR. So far as I know, whenever it's come to discovery, they've folded their tents and they've moved away from the lawsuit because they got a lot to hide, in my opinion. And that is why I'm doing this. I'm not going to let them drive me out of the radio business, because if it's me today, tomorrow it's your favorite talk show host. And the next day it's the liberal talk show host. We cannot let them do to us what they were doing in England. Please protect freedom of speech. Again, you can go to michaelsavage.com. You can do it through PayPal. And I have not done an appeal in 3 weeks. Or you can, if you prefer, make a check payable to the Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco, 94111. Again, it's on my website. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco, 94111. Very soon we will hear what's coming down from the judge who, strangely enough, has not yet given a written opinion of the it wasn't the trial. It was a written opinion of the first hearing before her. We have not yet gotten it, and we don't know why. The minute we do, I will let you know. Now, I've sent out a free gift to all people who've donated over a certain amount, because I cannot send the free gift to 20,000 people. It would immediately deplete the entire defense fund. So please understand that I can't return your kindness in kind, or there'd be nothing left. In any case, this is a huge victory for conservatives around the Western Hemisphere. It will be swept under the rug by all of the media and all of the press, I can guarantee you. They will continue to propagandize. With God's will and your listenership, I'll broadcast live from Los Angeles, and we have a lot to look forward to. I'm shifting into fifth gear.
Savage.